Good morning. Today is Friday, April the 9th. Joining us this morning is Battalion Chief Nick Lorenz.
Lanius.
Dang it.
It's okay.
No.
It's pretty rare somebody gets it on the first try or even the second.
Okay, say it again so I'm not part of that crowd.
Lanius.
All right. I got it now. You watch. It's Nick.
That's it.
Are you ready for our question for this morning?
Most certainly.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
As ready as I can be.
You guys must have been figuring something out. Okay. Why do we say something is brand new?
I would imagine this probably goes back to the consumer boom after World War II and the emphasis placed on different brand names.
You're about 300 years too early.
Too early, huh?
Yeah. The word brand, as it's used in this definition, means fresh from the fire.
Oh, okay.
As might be said of something recently made in a forge. In fact, in Shakespeare's day, the term actually was fire new.
Okay.
Instead of brand new.
So it's a fire brand.
Yeah.
Well, that's appropriate.
We get lucky every once in a while around here.
That wasn't planned, huh?
No. That's just the next one in the sequence. Oh, how has the color changes that we've all been suffering through impacted you guys?
The
red, purple, green, yellow, orange, polka dot, whatever it might happen to be.
To help prevent any kind of COVID spread within in-house. So, you know, for example, in the red tier, you know, there's a large focus on groups of people. So we try not to have, you know, more than 10 people grouped together at any place at a time. So we would not have a platoon meeting or a classroom-based training. It would be remote.
That's got to be a little different. Yeah, and you know, I had one of these goofy things last hour, you know, trying to play off one another, you know, the normal way you play off and interact. I would think when you're working together, and whether you're working together with somebody today or this afternoon or tomorrow morning, when you're all at the same place, you really need that interaction because you got to know more about the people that you're going to be relying on than just, here's a face on a screen, thank you very much, and maybe I decided to pop the picture off because I'm eating lunch.
Most certainly, and you know, we're about 56 members strong, and having those relationships are important. Thankfully, you know, we're able to,
as a financial professional,
have some in-person interaction,
I'm
just not at a large group level. I mean, we do have a group of three firefighters who just recently graduated their academy, and they are now on shift. And you know, a big part of any academy is getting those new people some interaction with the crews that are already on. You
the
know,
gray hairs,
or just people who've been there for you know, longer than 6 weeks or 8 weeks.
Not gonna go with that one, huh? Okay, fine. Now, when you do get the new recruits or the new sign-ons or hires, do you keep them as a cluster together so that they kind of bond with one another, or do you intersperse them throughout everybody so that they get in a different sense?
Yes. So the hiring process goes once the firefighters pass their hiring process, which is very extensive. They then go into an in-house academy. So they already have a basic level of certifications
like
and training. But
watched.
Then we want to show them,
send over Wi-Fi,
not necessarily our way of doing it, but get them familiar with our equipment and how they apply those basic standards to the way that we do business.
Oh, that'd make a ton of sense. I mean, if they had trained on, let's say, a purple brand, and you guys have got green brand.
Right.
Yeah. The goal is the same. You know what you want, but how to get there might be slightly different.
Yes. So we train them as a group, but then the group moves between different crews based on you know, different members' level of expertise in different subjects.
Well, not who has the day off.
No, we tend to do that. That training is done with the crews on duty as well.
Okay, so they do get a sentence. Now, one of the things I understand is a bit of a challenge, and maybe this is when you become a... Was the engineer the equivalent of the driver?
Yes.
Okay. When you become a driver, is you got to know where you're going.
Absolutely.
And even if dispatch tells you one direction, if you know you should be going a different way, you know that. How long does that take somebody who's new to the community to really get to that level? Because if you're doing some of the classroom training or the maintenance and you know, mowing the lawns and all that kind of stuff that's also part of what your responsibilities are, how do you know where East Polk Street is?
Right. It definitely depends on the individual and, like you say, their experience within the community. And it takes some time, but there are opportunities to learn. I mean, most crews is a captain, engineer, and a firefighter. And so as a firefighter, if you're looking forward to moving up into that driving seat, you can use that expertise of both the captain and the engineer to help get you there. And every call really gives you an opportunity to test your own knowledge, whether or not you're going to it.
How would I do it and kind of play the middle game?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's always my recommendation for folks who are wanting to increase their knowledge base with the response geography is.
Geography?
That's what we call it.
You mean instead of driving?
Yeah. Well, that driving is different from you know, response
geography. Or knowing how to get there kind of thing. Yes.
The standard that we hold people to is a 25-question test. Verbal, and they verbalize the turns, lefts and rights, even to the point of what side of the street the address is on.
Okay, odds are evens.
To 80%, yep.
Well, most of them are odd or even, right? I know there's a couple clinkers in there just
for
various reasons.
Yeah, odds and evens.
Do they have to memorize or know where the fire hydrants are?
No, not necessarily. I mean, have a basic understanding of the water system and what's where, but... for the most part, if we're responding to a fire where we'll need a hydrant, we take a second to check the map.
Yeah, that's the other guy's job. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Nick Lanius.
Yep.
Lanius. Got him right. I just had to flow it a little better. Lanius. I wrote down Lon for Lon Simmons. I just
That works.
Yeah. I'll never mispronounce that part of your name. Before the break, Nick, we were talking about some of the training stuff that you guys do. And obviously the training hasn't been relaxed because of this period when things have changed. Has it altered the type of training? Not how you train, but the type of training? Like medical aids, are you able to respond the same way that you were before? Or if there was a car crash, do you respond the same way that you did before? Or has that process changed also?
Yeah, everything has fundamentally changed. Now we have to go to calls that have medical implications with a level of protection, you know, that we haven't had to do before. We've always had equipment to isolate ourselves from our patients, to protect from bloodborne pathogens, but now we're concerned about airborne pathogens. And so that leads us a lot to, you know, when we're going on medical aids, we're wearing N95 masks and eye protection, as well as gloves. And, you know,
if you go into a fire, though, you're not wearing mask inside of the headgear, are you?
No. No, if that SCBA face piece is a closed circuit system, so that protects us from that. So there's no filtering.
Oh, that's right. The breathing thing is already...
Yeah.
You look kind of weird going into the grocery store wearing those, though,
at,
huh?
At times, yeah.
Yeah.
Although, at the beginning of this, I remember reading about there were some departments elsewhere in the state and the country where they had an outbreak or they had an individual who came down with COVID, and they would bring in, you know, people, industrial cleaners, to clean these places, almost like a hazardous materials incident. And they'd be
The whole spray down, wash down.
Yeah.
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 Yep. Yeah, it's got to be interesting.
So that part of our response has changed. The need for training has not changed. Of course, you know, as new aspects of COVID had come out, we have had to pass that information on to our crews so that they could best protect themselves and we could all stay safe. You know, but that's in addition to our regular annual training.
Have you seen more drug use? You guys are kind of... Yeah, I know that there's the sprint between you guys and the ambulance, so I'm not sure who gets there first regularly. But have you seen more drug or medical aid responses that aren't the prescription screw-ups or somebody being drunk and, you know, hurting themselves, that kind of thing? But with the drugs, are you seeing more use of those, more of the hypodermic type?
Hard to say. You know, without going to our records management system and going, just gut feelings, probably... I want to say it's probably stayed about steady. Do see sometimes, not to pun, spikes in some of that stuff.
Paydays?
It goes up and goes down, kind of, you know, on a smaller level, month to month, but also, like, you know, season to season and kind of year to year.
Oh, there is a seasonality to it.
It's sometimes there's a rush or we go through a lot of calls like that, and then it seems like there's a while before we go to them, or they're spread out a little bit more or not as common, and then we kind of go again.
I can remember going over decades, right?
Yeah.
That you'd always tell when something new was in town. All of a sudden you guys were running hell-bent for leather.
Yeah.
And you just went, what's going on? In 3 or 4 days it would kind of run its course and things would kind of settle back down again. And you chug along, and maybe if there was a payday, you might see a little bit of a mini spike. But you could always tell when somebody got some new stuff in town.
Yeah, yeah. And as that stuff goes, it's just getting kind of more and more dangerous, more and more potent.
I think a lot of us are familiar with the THC being bred in to be higher levels with the marijuana today than the marijuana from 40 years ago. Same with meth and some of these other things? Are they kind of monkeying with it even more?
I think with the opiates particularly, you're seeing more like with the oxycodone and even fentanyl as being, fentanyl itself as being much, much stronger and more potent than, you know, kind of street-level heroin or even some of the other prescriptions.
It's funny you mentioned those to me, and it's like, okay, yeah, those are all prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. If you need more, you get more. If you need less, you get, you know, a lower dose. They're taking that now and playing with it?
Either that or getting the prescriptions and just taking as much as they want or as much as they can.
Oh, I see. Just doubling down on the number of pills.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
It's sad.
I just, the connection just isn't there for me. It would be, I'm sure, yeah, it's sad to see, but it's also weird to consider.
Right.
You know, why would you take more than what you need with a prescription? But you guys deal with that stuff on a regular basis. As I heard somebody was talking earlier this week, have you experienced that people are using the ambulances now as transportation to get across town? Take me to the hospital. They arrive at the emergency department and, oh, no, that's okay. I'm here. I don't really feel that bad anymore. I'll just, thanks for the ride, guys.
Not so much of that as just as like stuff that's been where you have folks that maybe they know the right words to say when they call, and then, you know, what happens when they get to the hospital, we're not always aware of whether right. they go in and get treated or.
Well, when you see them walking out the driveway before you guys leave.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good clue.
Well, if we're riding them in, if we're going to the hospital with them, then it's probably going to be a lot more serious. Right, that is going to be based on the level of severity of their chief complaint.
Okay, so you're just hearing anecdotal then also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Nick Lanius from Humble Bay Fire. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Market, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Humboldt Bay Bistro, and Randall Sand and Gravel. Nick, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, you know, they say it's not a fire degree you get, it's fire science degree that you get. Certainly there's been a lot of laboratory studies going on in the last 4 or 5 years in our neighborhood about fire suppression, some of the mini climates that are developed inside of some of these fires that go on. Are the firefighters in our area more adept, more experienced, have a greater background because of this? Is that kind of the flip side of having all these fires, is that you're the experience pool now that the entire staff has is enhanced because of some of these things?
I would say that experience is a great teacher, but it also has to come with a foundation of knowledge of what's actually happening, because given, you know, the conditions that you see, you could kind of make up anything that you wanted about, you know, yeah, these fires only burn on Fridays, so let's avoid Fridays, instead of, you know, understanding, you know, how fires start, how they grow, how they act inside of buildings and houses, whether it's an open floor plan or if it's closed off, or even the construction type, you know, if it's a newer constructed house made of lightweight materials, or an older Victorian, which has void spaces which run from, you know, the ground to the
top
roof,
to bottom,
into
yeah,
the attic,
yeah,
and then across the floors as well. So understanding the fire environment, both the building and then the science behind the behavior, really helps a lot. And when you have that knowledge, then that experience helps you to understand what you're seeing, which, so they both kind of feed off of each other, and they make for some pretty high speed and technically competent firefighters.
Are most of the Victorians now, do they have insulation in them? I mean, I know initially they would just stuff newspapers in them, no freeze blocking, and so you had a series of chimneys, right? But if you spray in the insulation, doesn't that obviously, it's a different material in the equation for you guys to be concerned with. But does that slow down the spread at all, or does that fiberglass, the Owens Corning to or Johns Manville, does that just kind of go melt down and it doesn't really impact the fire one way or the other?
It depends. I think it depends on the level of coverage and the type of material. Generally, if a space is empty, that's going to allow, you know, fire and smoke to travel more. And then that fire to spread. So if you kind of block it up with anything, it'll take a little bit longer to burn through that and then spread. So
something's better than nothing, but yeah, a teddy bear isn't going to stop it from getting through the roof.
It depends.
Okay, the size and what the teddy bear is made of. Right. All right,
yeah, fine. Whether it's completely blocking it and what's going on maybe in the stud bay, you know, on either side of it. Yeah, right. If it's able to penetrate into that area as well.
So when your team arrives on site, let's say it's a Vicky, just for giggles, do you look at the outside more than the inside? I know the roof is a critical one too, and the starting point, but how do you determine what kind of materials are inside the wall or may not? You know, if the residents or the owner is there, they might have a clue, but how do you guys look at something like that?
Sure. Well, a captain I used to know was fond of saying that conditions dictate actions. So
when you can drop names around here. We probably had them all along, yeah, right, anyway. So, yeah.
When responding to fires, we, our company officers first will get out and do a walk around to get a 360-degree view of the place to check on smoke conditions, fire conditions, you know, any sort of wild card surprises and that sort of thing. And then, yeah, judging from what you see on the outside will tell you kind of where the fire is. If you can question people to figure out what's inside, that's always a benefit. But typically the best way to do that is to start to make entry if it's a favorable conditions, and then start to open stuff up, and then you can see what's going on.
So try to put eyes on inside and outside as much as you can.
Concurrently while extinguishing the fire, because that makes all the other problems go away.
That's why you wear the funny rain hat.
Yeah.
Does it matter what room? I mean, if it's a bedroom, is it treated different than a bathroom, different than a storage closet? I would suspect so.
Fires are going to act differently in each of those different areas, right, based on what's available to burn, how advanced the fire is, and where it's moving to. But, you know, part of our strategic decision-making process, you know, we think about, do we need to rescue anybody and remove them from the environment? And then, like, what is this fire exposing? What is in danger of burning next? So inside of a house, if you have a fire in a room, there are exposures that are inside that house, like adjoining rooms, and then ultimately the house, and then the next house, and then the block.
Right, yeah. The ripple
effect. So try to keep it small and get after it.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Nick Lanius from Humboldt Bay Fire. Nick, as you look at some of the different constructions, the different modes, was it Rick or, no, it was Sean last month, and we were talking about with the solar panels now for new home construction, that you guys now have got input on that also, because if, you know, the whole side of the roof is solar panels, and that's the side that's on fire. Okay, you're not just going to jump on the roof there. You've got different challenges. The changes in technology, as well as some of the changes in the rules and the regs that are put in, how abreast do you guys have to be with the construction code?
On the prevention side, We have to have some level of familiarity. Really, when you talk about stuff like building techniques and what's sort of in what's trending right now, you know, as soon as we become aware of it, you know, we want to learn more. I mean, in the case of solar panels, that does create some issues for us to operate safely both under and above a fire. You know, there's the obvious, the extra weight that's on that area, which could cause an earlier collapse. Or there's a potential for electrocution for our personnel. Typically, if we're on a roof, the fire is underneath us, and we're cutting a hole in it so that we can start to ventilate some of those products of combustion.
And you got this thing called water that you bring along with you?
Right, yeah.
That's one of the basics, at least for my understanding, is water and electricity often don't mix. They don't play well together.
Yeah, and so part of, you know, our standard operating procedure is to secure the gas and the electrical services to a building that's on fire. And that, with solar panels, it's hard to tell the sun to kind of, hey, stop shining for a few minutes, because as long as there's sunlight on it, it keeps kind of creating that stuff.
Yeah, you yell out, this is Humboldt County, where's the fog? doesn't quite bring home the bacon?
No.
Now, what about steel studs? That's something else that is foreign for a lot of us, but it is becoming more and more prevalent as the cost of lumber goes up. Does that change anything?
Well, obviously the steel wouldn't burn, but it is affected by levels of heat.
Yeah, when it goes, and now you got it all at once, don't you?
And particularly, yeah, it weakens it, and it starts to deform it, elongate it, or bend it, if it's, you know, depending on how the load is going. So,
well, just think of the pot that you have on the stove that doesn't have any water in it, and it's been there for a little too long. It just kind of starts going goofy. I would think walls are comparable.
Yeah, and we have examples of that in other construction types, you know, that utilize metals regularly. So the hard part with those kind of studs in a residential building is it might not be something that we're expecting.
Right. It could be a remodel or an addition. So yeah. The whole structure isn't that way.
Yeah. Or just new construction. And, I mean, although we have a higher index of suspicion with newer construction because a lot of the materials for cost-saving purposes are becoming, you know, lighter weight and smaller, which give us less time to operate.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. I thought, you know, perhaps the strength would be equivalent. So it would take longer for it to get to that point where there's concern rather than you just got less mass and the fire goes through less mass quicker.
Yeah, the mass is the key there. I mean, it can still hold up to maybe the same amount of loading of weight, but once you introduce fire into that equation, that, you know, it's just like when you start a fire in your fireplace, you start it with smaller pieces and then feed the bigger pieces. So now we're just burning a house that's just all smaller pieces. So,
do you always presume that there's natural gas in the building and when you go to the service, turn everything off? Is that kind of like step one?
Yeah, it's right up there with along the initial arriving actions. Typically, if we'll assign our rapid intervention crew, which is OSHA required, anytime we have a crew inside of an environment that's immediately dangerous to life or health, they're out there for a rescue team for the people that are inside. And so one of the first things that they do as they complete, get their 360-degree view, and just to check on the building and figure out where the crew is and develop a rescue plan in case something happens bad, they will secure the utilities, electric and
gas.
So
you turn everything off so there are no surprises.
Absolutely. And most of our interior crews, you know, as they're making headway against the fire, they're going to start to want to open up, you know, walls and ceilings and areas and stuff like that. And so
you don't want to find that electrical conduit in the middle of the wall with your chainsaw.
Absolutely. Or an, even an axe.
No, you still have axes.
Oh, absolutely.
No, not sawzalls?
Yes. Well, you know, the gas operated chainsaw isn't going to do very well in a fire environment. Maybe outside above it.
Yeah, you don't want to bring the boom in with you.
Yeah, so yeah. Typically hand tools, we have prying tools and hooks and axes, and they're all very, very handy and efficient for what it is that we're trying to do.
Well, no wonder you guys like building all the time. You're playing with the tools at work. At least you're familiar with them, huh?
Yeah.
You'll be able to do some of that kind of stuff. That must change the training, though, that you need to do also to get that familiarity with these different products and these different applications as well.
Yeah, and different tools. I mean, sometimes we get lucky and somebody allows us to use a house that's being torn down or something like that. And it becomes harder and harder to do a live fire burn just with some air quality stuff.
Yeah, it used to be pretty common, and now it's pretty rare, isn't it?
It's a little bit difficult for sure. Yeah. But there are plenty of opportunities inside of a structure if somebody was so inclined to let us use it for a little while and didn't mind that it became damaged beyond repair. We can cut holes in the roof.
You mean like a grow house?
No, I'm just a vacant house.
Oh, okay.
Somebody was tearing down to remodel.
Okay, in the old days, a grow house. Oh, boy. Well, hopefully this weekend will be a real calm one for you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You don't have duty, do you?
I will go off tomorrow morning.
All right. Calm Friday.
There we go. Here's hoping.
See everybody tomorrow.
Thanks.